Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome everybody. It's good to have you back in for another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. Got a great show for you today. Happy Father's Day weekend to everyone out there that is a father, husband, or even just would like to be a father or husband. Happy Father's Day to you this weekend. Hope you're enjoying yourself and you take some time to be with your family or do something special for yourself, whatever it may be. In honor of Father's Day, my guest today is going to be David Frey. Just a little bit about him before we get to the show and some other things. David has been married himself for 33 years to Ingrid Frey. They actually met as missionaries in Bolivia and then started dating in college. They adopted two children at birth. Their names are Sterling, who is 26, and Alina, who is 21. David himself worked as an executive in the business world and as a solo entrepreneur for the last 23 years. And unfortunately, has a genetic disease that has no cure. So he decided to set aside his business career to help men become better husbands. David is a marriage researcher who has studied relationship dynamics for several years and is the author of the book titled 301 Ways to Become a High Value Husband. So thought it'd be a great time to have him on to talk about men, to talk about being a better husband and our relationships, of course. So we're going to get to him, but before we do, just want to do some housekeeping things. First off, if you are new to the show or listening for the first time, please, if you like the show, go rate and review it on Apple iTunes. It just is a way of helping the show boost its ratings, which then gets it out there to more people and more people can come in contact with it. Share any episode that you can on Facebook or whatever platform. If you like the show, again, please do feel free to do so. Again, just to share the word that's being presented here and in an effort to try to just make us better and to help us in any way that we can. Also, if you're interested, you can, in contacting me or doing any work with me, coaching, therapy, etc., you can contact me via email, ryanwinder@gmail.com, or visit my website, ryanwinder.com. Also, speaking of marriages and being better as husbands or wives or whoever, my marriage challenge, there's a link to it on my website. I've reduced the price to $19. I just want everybody to have the opportunity to utilize the tools, the information that's on that site. $19, not a big ask. It's really, you know, I don't know, it's probably less than your subscription to Apple iTunes or whatever it may be, but you know, it's just there's a lot of great things in that challenge. And like I said, I just want everybody the opportunity to have that. So you can get the link on my website for that challenge. Also, if you're interested in, again, just staying connected with the show, I have a Facebook page, Ryan Winder, Vegas Therapist Podcast on Facebook. You can join that and just follow any updates or things I post about therapy or about different topics. And yeah, it's just great to hear from you, whether it's through there or email, anything about the show, topics you'd like to have covered, just feel free to reach out to me. And also one last thing, I know I've said this before, but just in a way of like, if you're a part of a group or part of something that you think I'd be a good fit for, as far as coming and speaking or giving some kind of speech, I'd be happy to try to work with you in making that happen. Looking to try to expand that role in my work. So feel free to reach out to me if you think that that'd be something that you would like me to participate in. So with that said, let's get to our show and David and all the great things he's going to be talking to us about today. And my guest, David Frey, to the program. David's here to talk to us about all good things, husbands and being better husbands. So welcome, David, to the program.
Thank you very much, Ryan. I appreciate you having me on. I'm honored to be on this podcast. Oh, well,
I appreciate that. It's good. It's great to have you, and it's good timing. Hot Father's Day weekend, so I really appreciate you making the time to come on. So for my listeners, could you just give us a little bit of background on yourself? I know I did a little introduction prior to this, but if you want to just give us a little background about yourself and kind of how you got into coaching husbands to be better at what they do. So, right. Yeah.
Well, thank you. You've already told them a little bit about my background. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in the military. I was in business for myself for many years. But I have a genetic disease, and my mother died of it. My two older brothers died of it. I have another brother who had a kidney transplant. I've had a kidney transplant. And so it has no cure. And I figure I probably have maybe 10 years left in my life. And so I stopped to really think about what is it that I, you know, how do I want to spend my last 10 years if I'm going to continue working? And I cannot think of anything more important than helping husbands to become better partners to their wives. And it really should go without saying when we look at the marriage statistics. And there, you know, there was one study, and I'm sorry that I don't know the name of it or the specifics of it, but the study was done basically said this, that 80% of the success of a marriage is due to how the husband, his beliefs, his thoughts, and his behavior versus 20% for the wife. Meaning, if the husband shapes up, there's a good chance that the marriage is going to be a very good marriage. If the woman shapes up and the husband doesn't, there's not much of a chance of it becoming a great marriage. And so there's a lot of leverage when the husband really becomes a high value husband, high quality husband on the marriage. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, you know, I've been married for 33 years. Not all 33 of those years have been happy. Let me tell you, there was a time in my marriage where my wife took off her ring and put it on the dash as she was crying, and it freaked me out. And I would like to say that was the catalyst of really me changing, but even it was still a couple of years later to where I really came to myself and I really started focusing on studying what creates a high value husband. And I've been studying that for many years and putting it into practice. And so that's kind of my background.
Nice. Well, that's great. And I actually hadn't heard of that study. That's actually pretty remarkable as far as like just the impact of husbands. I'm going to tip people off a little bit here, you know, and it kind of goes on with that study a little bit. Like a lot of times, you know, people will come to me, you know, for relationship advice and, you know, obviously therapy and stuff. And they'll choose me because their husband will want a male for a counselor, right? Because they feel more safe or comfortable with the male. But what's interesting is a lot of times it's easier for me to side with the female, and not necessarily because like I'm battling males, but I think, again, just like the expectation is there's a lot there usually that men need to do to step up and be better and be different. So it's like, I'm not just going to like kind of like co-sign your bad behaviors. Like you want, you know, you have an impact, you have a role, you needed to step up and do better. So I'm really excited to hear some of the things that we're going to talk about from you today. I know for people that are watching it, you have this book, The 301 Ways for High Value Husbands. And now you're writing a new book though, that we're going to talk about. And the new book is The Number One Rule for High Value Husbands. Now, of course, when you hear that, the number one rule, I'm obviously very curious as to what the number one rule is. So can you tell us a little bit about that and about the book?
Well, let's talk about that, because it's from my experience in my own marriage, mm-hmm. because when I started following the number one rule, my marriage changed almost overnight. It was a very, very dramatic shift when I started following the number one rule. And there'd been a lot of studies about the cause of divorce, and you've probably seen them all. And many of them have actually different outcomes as to what is the number one cause of divorce. A lot of them say adultery, infidelity, and things like that. But there are several surveys that say that lack of commitment is the number one reason for divorce. In fact, there's a 2013 study that says that 73% of couples that were surveyed said that lack of commitment was the number one reason for their divorce. And what is lack of commitment? Well, I interpret that as basically they gave up. They gave up for a number of reasons. You know, there could have been infidelity and such betrayal that, you know, maybe one spouse just could not get over that. Mm-hmm. It could have been they just got tired of trying, at least their version of trying to fix the marriage. There's a lot of reasons, but basically they no longer wanted to take responsibility and they just headed to divorce court. And there's another study, it was in 2017, that said that, and they had surveyed divorced people. And there was a finding that said this, that divorced people were 6 times more likely to blame their spouse than themselves for the divorce. In fact, only 5% of all the respondents said it was their fault, right? Mm. So I'm sure, Ryan, you've seen these people go to divorce court, no one standing up and said, it was all my fault. No, it's almost always.
Divorce court, let alone that, the first session, they're not doing that. So
what is the number one rule? In my personal opinion, in my experience, the number one rule for a high value husband, for a man, is taking ownership of yourself and your marriage. Okay. Taking ownership and responsibility.
Okay. That's I mean, some people might look at that and think, okay, well, that's maybe a little bit broad, maybe it hits them in a certain way. But so how do you define taking ownership, or what does that mean for you, or in the way that you're viewing it, I guess, or teaching it?
It is a broad term. So let me try and define it. Ownership is taking responsibility for the results of your marriage. So like if you were to take your own personal survey between you and your wife and whatever the results of that survey would be, you need to take ownership of that, take responsibility for that. Ownership doesn't mean that you take 100% of the fault of problems in your marriage. That's ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But what it does mean is that taking 100% responsibility for the 50% part that you play in the marriage. And that 50% part of the marriage is you. Mm-hmm. So taking ownership is taking full responsibility for how you have influenced that, your marriage. Ownership. Mm-hmm. Ownership is looking in the mirror first when things aren't going well in your marriage. So obviously the opposite of ownership is blaming, right?
Yeah.
If you break down the word ownership, own your ship.
Nice. Yeah.
Think of your life as a ship and you're the captain of your ship. I was in the Navy for 6 years. So I kind of like this example, because wherever the captain said the ship needed to go, that's where we went, right? Mm-hmm. So you can steer your ship any way that you want. A lot of people think that there are many forces outside of themselves that are completely controlling their lives, but you and I know that that is not true. They'd like to believe that, mm-hmm. and escape from it, but ownership is when you own your ship. You are the one that steers your ship to wherever it might be. Now, we used to get into high waves when we were when I was out at sea. And what did we do? How do you steer it? How do you control a ship in high waves? You steer the ship.
Or you steer, okay.
You steer the ship directly into the wave.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
You don't go sideways. You don't turn around. You go directly into the wave. And so that's what you need to do in your marriage. That's part of ownership. And I think that the husbands are leaders. Now, when I say that husbands are leaders in their marriage, I'm not saying that they are higher. I absolutely 100% believe that husbands and wives are completely equal in the decision-making process, in what you put into the marriage, 100% equal. What I mean is that husbands should be leaders in their marriage in how they conduct themselves, mm-hmm. in their examples, in their initiative, and things like that. We'll talk more about that later, but they're leaders in their marriage and in their family. And one of the key aspects of being a leader is that they take ownership. There's a book. Have you heard that book by Jocko Willink, Extreme Ownership?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jocko was a Navy SEAL, and he talks about taking ownership in the things that you do and for the results of things that happen. He gives some pretty crazy examples of things that went wrong that he took ownership over. But extreme ownership means that you are 100% responsible for everything in your world. Mm-hmm. Both the victory, this is what he says, quote, extreme ownership means that you are 100% responsible for everything in your world, both the victory and the defeat, the success and the failure. That's what extreme ownership means. And so the number one rule for high value husbands is to take ownership.
Great. So a couple of things just really quick in there. Definitely want to keep, you know, keep going on this, but one, I'm glad you clarified the idea of like the idea of a leader. Cause I think some people will kind of fall into that whole patriarchy kind of dynamic or whatever. And, you know, and even in this book that I've been reading, it's called Us, you know, he talks a lot about that, about like getting away from the one up, one down, and kind of really looking at same as, right? We have to operate as same as, but you know, anyway, the way that you talked about the importance of leadership and ownership and those things, I think help to kind of clarify, because it really is, you know, trying to be more of an example and trying to take that on fully rather than just like, you know, passing it off or saying, well, I'm better or I'm going to control. I think that's another word people kind of would look at is like when they think about things like, oh, you're being controlling versus no, it's not. That's not what it is. So I think that was a good clarification, because some people get kind of like tripped up by that or get triggered by that feeling of like patriarchy or, you know, control and all those kinds of things. So we're not heading that direction. That's not what we're doing, or that's not what we're preaching here. So, so then I guess the next thing is like, when you think about then the importance of ownership. So on the other side of it, so positively we take ownership, we're fully engaged in that. But then what happens when we don't take ownership?
I think learning what ownership is you can always kind of learn about something when you look at what it's not.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's just as important. And when you don't take ownership, you fall into victimhood. And victimhood is when you believe that all negative things that are happening in your life are beyond your control. You are the victim, right? And sometimes you are a victim of some pretty negative things that are out of your control. But most of the things in your marriage, you do have some level of control of through your own behaviors, right? So victimhood is manifested in blaming. And whenever you blame, shame follows. Right, Ryan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a manifestation of victimhood, is when you blame and shame your, in this case, your wife as a husband. Mm. Victimhood is the opposite of ownership. Ownership is empowering. Victimhood is disempowering. And what do I mean by disempowering? It means when you play the victim, you take away your power to make substantive changes in your marriage. When you play the role of victim in your marriage, you give up your power to change your marriage. You hand all the power over to your wife. And if she doesn't take the initiative to change anything, guess what happens? You're stuck. Mm-hmm. And that is why so many marriages get stuck, because they stay in the role of victim. They're always pointing their fingers at their, in this case, husbands pointing their fingers at their wife. If she would only do this, this would be okay. If she would only stop nagging me, this would be okay. If she would only stop complaining, this would be okay. Right? That is playing the role of the victim.
Yeah.
Because there are many things that you can do to influence your wife through your behavior, not directly control her, not coerce her, not force her. None of those, manipulation does not work in marriage. Love, manipulation is the opposite of love. Coercion is the opposite of love. You want your wife to love you, you cannot force that. But you can do things that will influence your wife to be more loving toward you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that, especially from the standpoint of like, you know, giving away your power. I even did a podcast on that recently about taking your power back. It, a little bit of a different dynamic, but I think, like you said, when you kind of fall into that victim mindset, it's like everything around you then is sort of controlling you. And then you just act like, okay, I can't do anything about that. You know, it, like you said, and I had that same thought about the, you know, if this would only happen, then I would whatever, versus like, hey, I can do this and influence that. And the hope would be that it would be, you know, that that will have a positive effect and then it's going to come back to me. Now, I think where unfortunately sometimes in our society, people want like an instant reaction, right? Where it's like you're trying to tread yourself out of like maybe some bad patterns or bad behaviors that have been going on for a long time. So then the key part to that is like, I have to consistently be willing to do those things to try to get something maybe back. And I can't just think, hey, you know what? I was nice to you one night and then, you know, you were still mean or you didn't, whatever, you didn't respond how I thought you'd respond. So therefore, once again, I'm the victim, you know, like I did something positive. So there's a lot that goes into that too, which is, you know, all a part of that process, but being able to be consistent in taking that ownership and also recognizing that we do have power to influence our spouse in a positive way. Now that reciprocation of that might take some time to come back, but it definitely is there as we hold on to that sense of, like you said, power to do that and not just kind of go back into the victim role. So, yeah, any other thoughts on that side of it, or is that?
Well, I do have a thought, and yeah, maybe we can address it in just a little bit.
Okay. All right. So the next part I want to kind of go into, like in kind of going down the path of the ownership aspect, is that I think that there's, you know, different, you'd mentioned, or and I think the book is going to refer to this, is that there's nine aspects or parts to ownership. I don't know if you want to just kind of go through each of them, kind of tell us a little about it. We can kind of have a conversation about them and then just kind of go through them. But right, is there nine aspects of ownership?
There's 10.
Okay. All right. So yeah, 10.
So let's talk about that. There's and there might be more, there might be less, but this is my version of that. And now I'm ready to address what you just talked about.
Okay. All right.
Because the very first, I'd say, step to ownership is having self-respect and self-love for yourself. Okay. This is so important because it speaks to the motivation behind why you're trying to change. Ownership starts with a desire to upgrade yourself. Taking ownership is all about improving yourself, not your wife or anyone else. It's about improving yourself. So you mentioned that when we first start to change because we want instant gratification, and let's say that we have not been a good husband for quite a while, so we've dug ourselves in this hole. Now we start doing these good things and we instantly want our wife to be like waving that magic wand. We want her to change her heart and everything. And then when she doesn't do it immediately, then we get offended and we throw up her hands and we say, screw it. I'm not going to put any effort into this if you're not going to put any effort into this, right? Have you seen that as a therapist, Ryan?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I had a client today that we were talking about the very same thing and just kind of like that dynamic of like when they first came in and kind of where they were at. And basically that's sort of what's part of their cycle right now is like one might try for a little bit, but they don't get the response they want. And then it's like, oh, see, you're not, you know, you're doing the same thing over and over again, rather than looking at the consistency. So it definitely happens a lot, you know, and I think I don't know if it's necessary we're wired for that, but we definitely, like you said, we want to see that instant result. But when it comes to emotions and people being able to put down their walls, you know, especially if they felt hurt, it's just not that easy. Right.
Well, we are wired. I will say it. We are wired for that. We are genetically programmed to be that way. But what that shows is a lack of self-respect and self-love for yourself, because the motivation to change should not be for your wife. If your motivation to change is so that you can, quote unquote, get your wife back or earn her love or earn her trust, then that's what's causing this problem. That when she doesn't automatically change or respond to you in a positive way, you get upset and you say, I'm not going to work on it if you're not going to work on it. If you have enough self-respect and self-love for yourself that you want to create the best version of yourself, no matter what happens in your marriage, whether you go to divorce court or whether the marriage is saved, you as a high value man should want to have enough self-respect and self-love for yourself that you start working on creating the best version of yourself. Because whether this relationship works out or not, you still have to do that hard work. Mm-hmm. What are the statistics for a second marriage
is it like 75%? Does it go up? Or
I think it's what, 60,
maybe 60, yeah,
75.
Yeah.
In other words, you have a much higher chance of divorce in your second marriage. And why is that? Because
you haven't changed anything.
And so you carry all those bad habits, all those limiting beliefs that are causing these things, mm-hmm, right into your next relationship. So the first part of ownership is to have enough self-respect and self-love for yourself. Look in the mirror and say, I love myself. I respect myself to become the best version of myself, no matter what she does, no matter what she says. If she rejects it, that doesn't matter. I still need to do the work. So that's the first part.
Can I just say one quick thing about that before you go to the second one? Just to kind of clarify for people, the way I put it in terms of things, it's like there's the difference between external motivation and internal motivation. External motivation has a short fuse because, again, that's changing for something or someone else, or even to avoid something worse. But again, short fuse doesn't usually, it might get the ball rolling, but if anything kind of negative, or again, if we don't get the results we're looking for, it's easy to give up on. So things have to be internally based for us to like endure some of the challenges or obstacles that might come. But again, you're doing it for yourself and the betterment of you. And that's going to go with you regardless of wherever you're at. And that's how we need to think of it. So anyway, just wanted to use that as a little.
I like how you said that. Mm-hmm. Instead of it coming from motivation, it really should come from inspiration.
Right. Yeah.
Inspiration comes internally, and inspiration has staying power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. The second thing is to be self-aware. Okay. Being able to be self-aware of your own flaws, your own weaknesses, your own mistakes. I call that level one awareness. But believe it or not, there's a lot of men who really are challenged with being able to see their own flaws and weaknesses. There is a statistic out there, and I don't know the exact number, but pretty much between 70-80% of divorces are filed by women.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say? It says that the men were kind of clueless. Either that or they were able to withstand more emotional, I don't know, but there's a lot of men. Have you ever heard some men in your office say, I didn't even know that was a problem, while the woman is suffering over here?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Either they didn't know it was a problem, or even again, going back to some of the, even just a client I was working with this morning, is like, again, that awareness part, whether it's a defense mechanism or whatever it is that they don't want to look internally. Cause here's the other thing that I'm sure would come out through different things we've talked about. Men struggle with shame. Men don't like to feel the feeling of not being good enough. But the problem is that can become an Achilles heel, because if we don't look at ourselves and look to see where we can improve, we're probably going to end up being, you know, having these flaws come out and then kind of having to maybe have them be put towards us by our spouse. And then when we feel it as shame, then, you know, when men feel shame, we tend to become defensive and withdraw. So then we don't even like want to look at it. So that just becomes like this repetitive cycle that I see a lot of times, and obviously that's hurting us, because one, we're not then really looking at the problem or the challenges or the things that we might struggle with, but then it's also, like you said, hindering that self-awareness, right?
Yeah. I like to use the word convicted. I don't really like the word feeling, you know, guilt, mm-hmm, or shame. Mm-hmm. And like you said, shame is a self-perpetuating problem, because mm-hmm, when you feel shame, you withdraw. And you start doing all the, you continue to do, and probably worse, do all the things that made your wife feel emotionally lonely and emotionally distraught, right? So
yeah,
the more shame you feel, the more you get into those negative behaviors that are causing the problem, and it's just self-perpetuating. Conviction, on the other hand, well, like when you're convicted in your heart, means that you see your flaw and you're inspired within to do something about it. That's conviction, right? I was convicted. That's a term I like to use, but that's like the level one awareness, to always be aware of your flaws and weaknesses and mistakes that you make. The level two awareness is not only being self-aware of your own flaws, but being self-aware of how your mistakes and flaws are emotionally hurting your wife. And I tell you, most men have no clue just how much emotional damage they're causing to their wife by their negative behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an awareness about your flaws and weaknesses, but there's a second awareness about how the hurt and pain that it's causing to your wife. So that is the second part of taking ownership.
Yeah.
The third part is remorse. Mm. So let me talk about this for a second. To own up to your mistakes or flaws, you've got to feel some level of remorse or hurt that you've caused. If you don't feel any remorse, you won't feel motivated to take full ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife wants to know that you're remorseful for your mistakes and the hurt your mistakes have caused her. Okay, this is important. I want men to remember this. She wants to know that you hurt her and that you feel remorseful for that hurt that you've caused her. This is a key part of healing. Healing has other things involved in it too, but a key part of healing is that your wife wants to know that you've hurt her and that you feel remorseful for that hurt.
Yeah. I agree. And I think the way that I see that come out, it kind of reminds me of the term validation. And even though validation might be different, but like you give validation to them through that remorse, right? That there's an acknowledgement of that hurt. There's a whole book, but there's a book called High Conflict Couples. And it talks about the role of validation in reducing pain, in reducing hurt, in reducing all sorts of things. It's amazing just what one simple thing can do as far as like validation goes. But I kind of see that in that realm of like remorse, right? Like I can give her validation by my ability to be remorseful. So that's kind of what sits with me with that. But yeah.
Yeah, this is a second whole conversation, but I will just say this. If there was one skill that a man could master that would make more difference in his relationship than anything, learn the skill of validation, validating your wife's feelings. That will make more difference in your relationship, in my opinion, than anything else, because we're all looking for connection. And that connection leads to intimacy. The bridge to intimacy is empathy. And when you validate a person, when you validate your wife, you're showing empathy for her. And again, empathy is the bridge to intimacy. When your wife feels intimate, when she feels connected to you, she will overlook your dumb mistakes. She will overlook a lot of your faults. She will open up to you emotionally, and she will open up to you physically.
Mm-hmm.
But she needs to feel that intimate connection with you. And that comes in large part through validation.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a whole different.
Yeah, right. But that's good.
Whole podcast. But I will say that is a big, there's a book called I Hear You.
Okay.
Mm. And, it's a fantastic book all about validation.
Okay.
The fourth aspect or part of ownership is admission. And that's just being able to admit to your wife of your flaws and mistakes. You verbally admit to your wife the pain and hurt that you've caused her because of whatever you did. And I bring this out because it is so hard for a man to admit his mistakes, because admission means you have to be vulnerable, and men by nature are not vulnerable. It is an emotional gymnastics for a man to really be emotional, because their number one need is respect, right? Mm-hmm. And when they're vulnerable and they have to admit their faults, they kind of lose a little, they feel like they lose a little bit of respect in the eyes of their wife. So that's how it all goes together. But admission is a very big part of ownership. Just saying, hey, yeah, honey, you're right. You have a good point there. I did do that. And its close cousin is apology. So mm-hmm. admission and apology. But a lot of people can make an admission and never say, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I did that, but they never say, I'm sorry for it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't say you're sorry for it, well, then your wife doesn't feel like you're being sincere.
Yeah.
So apology is the fifth aspect, and that's being able to sincerely apologize. And in that apology, again, she wants to know how much you hurt her. It's just a healing thing. I like to say that there's five types of men. Okay. It's kind of funny, but there's a lot of truth to this. Okay. The first type of man is a man who does not recognize that he's done wrong. So he doesn't feel remorseful. And so he doesn't admit his mistake and apologize. And so he never tries to change. And so his marriage just stays the same. The second type of man does recognize, he is self-aware that he's done wrong, but he doesn't feel remorseful about it. He doesn't feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't admit his mistake and apologize. So he never tries to change. So his marriage stays the same. The third type of man is a man who recognizes his mistake. He feels remorseful for it. He feels bad for it, but he just can't bring himself to admit his mistake and apologize to his wife. So guess what? He never tries to change. And so his marriage just stays the same. The fourth type of man is a man who recognizes his mistake. He feels remorseful. He admits his mistake and apologizes, but he never sincerely tries to change. And so his marriage stays the same. And there are a ton of men in this one category. There's a popular quote that I know that you've heard before. It says, the best apology is change behavior.
Right.
Right. If a man is apologizing over and over and over and over and over for the same dang thing that keeps hurting his wife, well, how is that
changed? Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually, they're just hollow apologies to your wife. Your mm-hmm. wife will hear it and say, I don't believe it. And so that's the fourth type of man. And the fifth type of man is a man who recognizes his mistake. Excuse me. He feels remorseful for it. He admits his mistake and apologizes, and then he creates a plan and starts to change. He creates a plan and starts to change. And so guess what? His marriage starts to improve. But you need all those different
components. Or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. So yeah. Apology is a very important part of that. Admission, remorse, being self-aware. All those things are very important in order to really start changing what you're experiencing and what your wife is experiencing in the marriage. I want to hit another really big one. This is number six, and this is self-forgiveness. Now, and this is really big for religious folks too. Being able to have compassion on yourself is very important. Being able to embrace your shadow or the dark side of yourself is very important. Being able to let go of your past mistakes and move forward is important. And so, excuse me, having mercy on yourself for your flaws and weaknesses is incredibly important, because if you don't, then it goes right back to what you were talking about earlier, Ryan. You start to shame yourself. And again, shame is that self-perpetuating, disempowering behavior that not only keeps you in the rut, but it makes you go further down into the hole.
Yeah. Can I say something really quick, and maybe you can grab a drink if your throat's bothering you while I say this. I think I've been reading this book. It's kind of an interesting book. It's called Anxiety RX. So I got onto it by digging into some anxiety stuff, but really there's a whole section in there about these defense mechanisms that we have. And one of his key tools in kind of healing ourselves is compassionate connection and with ourselves, not necessarily with others, but a compassionate connection with ourselves. And I really have taken to that concept even more so. And like you said, just as a way of like, if we don't have that for ourselves, if we can't be self-forgiving and recognize, hey, I screwed up. And one of the tools that the exercise he has in that book is he says, you know, sometimes it's just good to sit in front of the mirror and say, hey, I'm flawed. I'm weak. I mess this up sometimes. And I love that about myself, because it's just embracing the nature of who we are. It's not trying to push it away. It's not trying to, like, you know, get rid of it in the sense of whatever. We're going to make mistakes on our path to improving. We can still make mistakes. But I just really like that idea of just saying, you know what, I do these things and I love that about myself, and I just need to embrace it for what it is. And not, like I said, not say that we're not trying to improve, but just trying to get over that hump of like, hey, it's okay. Be compassionate toward yourself. It's much easier to move through it. And I think being compassionate to yourself allows you then to be better at admitting, be better at apologizing, because you're not, I think sometimes when we admit something, like you said, it's like we feel this sense of like, oh, I'm just this terrible person. I don't want to admit that. I don't want to admit that I'm bad. I don't want to apologize, because if I apologize, I'm acknowledging that I did something wrong. And all of it goes into that sense of like our shame and psyche and whatever. But having that compassionate connection or being self-forgiving, I think opens those things up too. So if I was even in that realm of like, you know, like 4, 5, and 6, a little bit of 6 needs to be almost prior to 4 and 5, because you need to feel that sense of it's okay within myself to maybe have a better path towards the admission and the apologizing. But anyway, not that I'm here to disrupt your order, but just a thought there. But
you are so spot on with that. Self-forgiveness is an enabler for vulnerability. When you can have compassion on yourself, exactly like you said, Ryan, it helps a man become more, give the ability to have more vulnerable. And I'm a Christian. And so I always say to myself, if Jesus can forgive me, I can forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me, it gives me strength. That's a very empowering thought for myself. Let's go on. Number 7 is a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So having, taking ownership is not, so a lot of times we forget this part, the next couple of things we're going to talk about with ownership. We think that ownership is just, you know, being able to recognize our flaws and our weaknesses and our mistakes and own up to them, admit our mistakes, and apologize. But as we said before, the best apology is change behavior. So you need to create a plan for improving yourself, a plan that helps you to turn your flaws into strengths, creating new and empowering habits. There's real ownership includes having a plan for creating change in your life. A lot of times we just think, you know, we apologize and everything, and we just, I don't know, we just don't even think about, how exactly am I going to rid this out of my life so that I can be a better version of myself to my wife? And many people think it's just going to happen. It doesn't just happen. I mean, nothing just happens in the business world. You know, it all starts in your mind and creating a plan.
Right.
Why would it be anything different in your marriage? And why would it be anything different in your self-development, your personal development? So you need to create a plan to change. That's what therapists do. Therapists help people to create a plan for themselves to personally change. That's what coaches do, life coaches and marriage coaches like myself. We help people to create a plan for themselves to help change. And an important part of that plan, which is number 8, is taking initiative. Now, remember I talked about leadership. And not that it's, you're creating an unequal thing. Leadership to me is kind of like the book that Robin Sharma wrote, The Leader with No Title. And what he was talking about in that book is that just through your positive behaviors, people will start to see you as a leader. And just by your positive behaviors in your marriage, your wife will start seeing you as a leader, and you will start seeing yourself as a leader. And one of the key components to that is taking initiative. One of the key manifestations of taking ownership is taking initiative. Taking initiative is initiating positive change in your life. Leaders take initiative. For instance, a husband who takes ownership takes initiative to learn how, for example, to stay calm and to start communicating better. He takes initiative to help around the home more. He takes initiative to take his wife out on dates. He doesn't just wait for the wife to tell him to do that or to complain about it. He takes proactive initiative. He takes initiative to go see a marriage therapist and get outside help if that's what he needs. Mm-hmm. Taking ownership means that you need to take initiative. He doesn't wait for his wife to beg him to do these things.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that makes you attractive to your wife. And if you're going through, I mean, if you're near divorce, that means your wife's not attracted to you, or at least has a low level of attraction. And what you're trying to do is make yourself more attractive for her. No, for you, you are trying to make yourself attractive to you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things is that you take initiative. Do you have any thoughts about that, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. And especially, like you said, just the notion of like those two together, the plan for change and then the taking initiative. Because like you said, I think there is some part of us, and I see that all the time, where it's like, hey, I'm sorry for X, whatever that is, right? And then, like I said, there's almost like this sense of like this mystical thing's going to take over and I'm just going to be different because, hey, I said I'm sorry, now whatever. And so the idea, I really do like the notion of the initiative, because it does make all the difference. I mean, even in like, I'm thinking in a little bit of a different dynamic, but a client I've been working with, as far as like, he's got some addiction stuff and his marriage has been on the verge of whatever, you know, like failure because of his addiction. And those are the exact things that we talked about last time. It's like his plan for change, but then also the idea of taking initiative, that he's not making himself viable to like making his wife feel more comfortable in his, in her sense of like where he's at. Because, you know, it's like, I told him, I said, hey, I gave you a couple numbers of some guys in recovery that would be great for you. Did you call them? Nope. Why not? I just didn't. Okay. Did you do this? Nope. Okay. So how do you think that that's coming across to your spouse, to your family, to anybody that thinks that you want to change and you've said you're sorry for your mistakes, but there's nothing that's happening as a result of that, right? You're not, and you're just hoping that you wake up one day and you don't feel like drinking. It's like, that's not going to happen. You know, you've got to put in that, not only have a plan, but you've got to take that initiative. Like, I got to be doing things that's telling my brain that I don't want to do this anymore. And I've got to be engaged in those things. So whether it's drinking, whether it's being a better husband, whether it's changing, whatever the behavior is. Yeah. If that initiative is not there, it's like, again, it's like sending a message to ourselves that, hey, I really want to go after this. I really want to do something different. And if we're not engaged in that, well, what are we telling ourselves? We don't really care. Right. And we're telling that to others. So I really like that. Those two together, the plan for change and then taking initiative. So,
you know, that's why your wife divorces you.
Mm-hmm.
She gets to a point where you're not doing nothing. And she says, well, if he's not going to do anything, if he's not going to work on this marriage, what is there left?
Right.
So that's
yeah.
Can I give you an example from my personal life? And I'll be very vulnerable here.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I feel very remorseful about it. Mm-hmm. I used to yell at my wife. And my wife is so beautiful. She is so tender-hearted. She is probably one of the most compassionate women. She is the most compassionate woman that I know. And we used to get in these disagreements, and I would yell at her. I would lose control and yell. And finally, it got to a point where I was sick about myself. Because after I do something like that, I just felt darkness inside. I just wanted to withdraw from everything because of my stupid behavior. And I finally said, enough is enough. I need to stop yelling. This is not right. And so guess what? I started trying to learn how to create this new habit of not yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I created a plan. This is what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
And I initiated the plan, and here was the plan. There's five levels of your voice. There is a whisper. This is a whisper. And then this is talking low, and this is talking regularly. This is talking a little bit louder when your emotions start going up. And this is when you get out of control. I used to tell myself, I need to go to a level two. So when I feel my temperature rising, I got to drop down to a level two. Level two voice, Dave, level two voice. And so I would drop down to a level two voice. And I practice that and practice that and practice that. Your body will follow your breath. Your body will follow your voice. If you keep your voice low, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is a part of your nervous system that actually calms you down. And when you're whispering, there's a calming thing. There's a calming presence to that. Well, that's biological.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought it down to, and today I never yell. I mean, we have disagreements, but I never, ever yell. And that was because I initiated a plan of action. And it took me a while to figure out what that plan was. I took initiative to study it and get help. That's just an example from my own life.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's a great example. So, yeah.
I'm embarrassed about that, but not anymore because I forgive myself, because I know, you know, our bodies were made for one thing and one thing only, protection.
Mm-hmm.
All our nervous system, our brain and everything, our muscles were all created to protect ourselves. And our body has some pretty really good protective systems in it. Our brain has protective systems. And all these negative behaviors are a result of our mind and our body wanting to protect ourselves. Back in the old days, it was protecting ourselves from a saber-toothed tiger. And that worked for that. But it does not work in relationships.
Right.
So that's the obstacle. That's our challenge to overcome our biological programming by reprogramming our brain. Okay, another topic. Yeah. Let me just give you know, it was nine, and I'll just give you this last one.
Okay.
And it's called living an ownership lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, living an ownership lifestyle is a mindset and attitude thing. If you want to change any of your behaviors in life, you have to start with your mindset, your beliefs, because your beliefs are what drive your thoughts. Your thoughts drive your emotions or feelings. Your emotions drive your behavior, and your behavior is what creates results.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to change any type of behavior in your life, you have to start with your beliefs, changing your mindset, your attitude. So living an ownership lifestyle is always admitting to yourself that you're somewhat complicit in the problems that you're having. It's creating a habit of constantly looking at the problems and arguments in your marriage and becoming self-aware of how your limiting beliefs and behaviors are negatively influencing them.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as you want to think that it's all your wife's fault, trust me, there are things that you're doing before her reactions that are influencing her negative reactions. But our bodies, because of the protection mechanism, all we see is her negative reaction. We say, well, she didn't react like that. But we never step back to think, what was our behavior that influenced that?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I do, a little tool, is called a trigger tracker. You ever heard of a trigger tracker?
I mean, not using that terms, but definitely like identifying our triggers is a big thing that I talk about too. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like a little journal that you create and it's got three questions in it. What was it that triggered you? So after every argument, you go to your journal and you say, what was it that triggered you? What limiting beliefs do you have that are causing that trigger? Now that's one that really takes some thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Then number three, what could you have done differently? And if you ever get an argument, you go to your journal, you write the answer to those three things, and then eventually you start to identify your triggers and you start to connect them to the limiting beliefs that are causing those triggers. And then you say, what could you have done differently? That's helping you to establish in your mind a new habit. It's almost like envisioning what you're going to do next, which is a very powerful thing. So those are like the nine areas. It was nine, Ryan.
Yeah.
Nine areas of ownership. Give me two more months and I'll probably add a few more.
Okay. That's great. No, those are great. So I know I'm up against the time. I got to get to a client, but just any last thoughts as far as either advice that you'd want men to have who want to start taking more ownership or just a place to start with that before we wrap up?
Yeah. I would say the very first thing is to just start working on your beliefs and thoughts. As I mentioned, I've got a friend named Mark Santiago. He's a great men's marriage coach, and he uses the analogy of the me button and the she button, right? He tells husbands to stop pushing the she button and start pushing the me button. And I like that because it breaks it down into very, very simple, something you can remember. It's catchy. And if you tell yourself consistently to hit the me button before you hit the she button, you're going to start living, training yourself to live an ownership lifestyle. And another idea is to involve your wife. Give her, here's an idea, give her a couple sheets of paper, put the headings on them that match the roles that you play as a husband. For instance, like here's four roles. Number one, you're an emotional confidant for your wife. You're a domestic partner helping her in the house, the spiritual leader, and a romantic partner. Because let's say those are four roles. There's others. Mm-hmm. Now, at the top of these sheets of paper, you give it to your wife. And you say, I want you to think about me. What are the things that I need to keep doing? And then on the other side of the paper is do more of or start doing.
Mm-hmm.
And really ask your wife to put some thought in. This is her opportunity to really help you take more ownership in the marriage. And when she's done with that exercise, you're going to have a very good roadmap of things that you can immediately start taking ownership of that are written there in black and white. Men like lists. When you see it in black and white, okay, now I can work on it.
How can I fix this? Okay, there it is.
places you can start to take more ownership in your life.
Great. Great. Well, those are all great. I really enjoyed the discussion. I feel like it's something we could probably go on for longer, unfortunately, with the time constraint, but I really appreciate you coming on and sharing these things. Really quick. I know, like you told me earlier, not necessarily here to promote whatever, but just if people wanted to touch base with you, how could they do that?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I think it's DFREY. You just fb.com/DFREY if they want to friend me, but
because you do post things and just different things and people want to know more about your whatever. So
posting marriage advice and so that's a helpful resource.
Okay, great. Well, once again, it's great to have you on. We should probably do it again because the new book will come out and we can, you know, get together and talk a little bit more, because I think it's just a great work of how we can be better husbands, better men, just better in general. It's all good stuff. So there's more for us to talk about, but thanks again for coming on and we'll hopefully talk soon.
It was an honor, Ryan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks again to David for coming in and sharing all of that about the importance of taking ownership in our relationships as husbands, fathers, men in general. It just really is an important aspect for us as far as our ability to improve our relationships, our own self, and so many other things that I think it can have value for in our lives as we try to take more ownership for ourselves and for what we're doing and our part in things. I mean, really, not to get too far off the path, because I think this is such a great message, but when you look at our current society, there's so much blame, there's so much pushback, there's so much not taking responsibility, not taking ownership for things in our lives, that this aspect of or this way of being, you think it's kind of like wildfire, and I'm just worried about how far that can spread. So we've got to do it for ourselves first and be the model and be the leader in what that looks like in our families, in our relationships, with our spouses. And so I think the time is now for us to stand up and to be better people, to be better husbands, to be better fathers, to be better partners in all that we do. And I think this idea of taking on an ownership lifestyle definitely gets us in the right direction for that. And I think our lives will be much better because of it. And our relationships are going to benefit from as well. So thanks again to David. So if you want to check him out, he's on Facebook. You can friend him on Facebook again. And hope you got a lot out of this. And once again, happy Father's Day to everyone out there. And this is the Vegas Therapist signing off. Until next time.